You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
It is my personal life. My sexuality is part of who I am. I never sought to make it a secret. And my focus and priority has been on my ministry, on serving God, on serving God's people. And I do that, as I always have done, as a gay man. As part of the process of discernment for this particular post, I was open about my sexuality during that discernment process, and before that, obviously, with friends, family, and other people.
That's British Anglican Bishop Nicholas Chamberlain discussing his homosexuality in an interview with the BBC. And after he came out as the first openly gay bishop in the Church of England, there was a meeting of 72 conservatives, of various other authorities in the Church of England, a closed-door meeting, and the result of it appears to be a letter, an open letter to the bishops of the Church of England, calling for what they're saying is the unequivocal acknowledgement that all, including those who identify as LGBTI, are essential to the health and future of our church and mission to the wider world. Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about that letter, what it is demanding, and what will happen in the Church of England in response to it, especially among the bishops. Bishop Keith Ackerman will join us in just a few minutes. Then a little later on this Thursday afternoon, we're going to do our series Christ in the Old Testament today, Isaiah chapters 17 and 18, with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. You can join us over the next hour. Our call-in number for your questions and your comments, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. Our beloved on-demand listeners use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about an open letter to Church of England bishops asking them to accept gay members and leaders, Bishop Keith Ackerman, former bishop of the Episcopal Diocese in Quincy, Illinois, ambassador for Anglican and Ecumenical Affairs for the Anglican Church in North America. Bishop Ackerman, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks so much. Good to be back with you.
What does this phrase in that open letter mean? Unequivocal acknowledgement that all, including those who identify as LGBTI, are essential to the health and future of our church and mission to the wider world?
Well, I think what we're recognizing is that they are really saying something to the Archbishop of Canterbury, for one. The current Archbishop of Canterbury sees himself as a master negotiator. And so, therefore, since he has, in effect, worked both sides of the fence, somebody has stepped forward and said, you can't play both sides. It's one or the other. And, of course, I would agree. It's just that I would reach a different conclusion than those who have penned that letter have.
What role did the coming out of Bishop Chamberlain, Nicholas Chamberlain, play in all of this movement?
Well, a rather significant one. And the reason I can say that is because I was in England when Gene Robinson was elected as the first openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Church. And the outcry over there was rather significant in many quarters, and the demand that something be done about it. And ironically, various meetings, conferences, gatherings were done, were held in order to address that problem in the Episcopal Church. And that played a part in the eventual split that took place in the Episcopal Church. I mean, he was one segment of it. And so I think that the Church of England is now faced with the very same thing that the Episcopal Church was faced with.
So how would you describe a different path that the Church of England may take as opposed to the obvious one that the Episcopal Church has taken?
Well, part of the dilemma, again, as we've discussed in the past, is being a state church. And I think when we hear what other leaders are saying, those who would identify themselves with one group called Anglican Mainstream, with the GAFCON, the global group, etc., what we're discovering, of course, is that the worldwide Anglican Church is to a large extent saying to those who wish to uphold the biblical principles, be bold. Forget about being a state church. Be bold for the gospel, because they have much to lose to be bold as it relates to property. That's not a debatable issue over there because of it being a state church. As it relates to the income, all the clergy are paid directly from church house. So this is a very big issue. So I would ask everybody to pray mightily for those who are standing against these innovations in the Church of England. And the Church of England, while certainly being only one of the provinces in the Anglican Communion, nonetheless, because of the Archbishop of Canterbury being the head of all of the Church of England, both provinces, York and Canterbury, etc., winds up being a very, very significant spokesman.
You talk about what they stand to lose if they are brave enough to stand up against the cultural pressure here to accept homosexuality as not only a norm but equivalent to that of heterosexual relationships. You're talking about both the pay and you're talking about the property of the church,
aren't
you?
That's right. Keeping in mind that their pensions would be affected too. So those who are identifying themselves as standing square in the gospel, square on the faith that the church has, know the implications of their stance. But here's the thing that you'll hear many of them say, and this is the thing that is so sad about so much of this, is as the Church of England is writing open letters regarding accepting unequivocally as alternative lifestyles the aforementioned ones, there are people living Christian lifestyles right now in countries that are being killed for standing for the gospel. And I don't believe that those who find their outspokenness about a pansexuality agenda understand that this can result in the deaths of Christians throughout the world, those particularly living in Islamic areas.
So you're talking there about Anglicans who would maintain a biblical position, but because of their either cultural or religious context, find themselves in danger because of the association they may have with a church that does affirm homosexuality.
That's exactly right. And the reason I think you've said it quite well, that's an excellent way of putting it. And the reason why we have to look at that is because once upon a time, many of those large provinces today were, in fact, associated with England. So if we look at many of the African churches, for example, the province of Nigeria is the largest province in the Anglican Communion, they would be incredibly affected because even though they're no longer under the crown, there are many people in Nigeria who still see a relationship with England. And England is given a much higher role in the minds of the people than in fact it has. Maybe it's somewhat symbolic or nostalgic, but it's real because in many instances when we discover people who are dying for the faith today, especially in Islamic countries, one of the things that is mentioned by those who execute is the very thing that's being discussed in open letters.
I wonder, how does the Church of England that has played its part in the kind of general Anglican resistance to what the American Episcopal Church has been doing. They've played a part in that. They've been they've tried to, you know, proceed to stand against what the Episcopal Church would say is some sort of inevitable tide. How do they look themselves in the mirror if they capitulate on this and continue to offer any kind of critique of the Episcopal Church in the United States?
Precisely. I mean, that is exactly the point. I remember one time after a group of English had come over to a convention that was being held in the Episcopal Church, and they met with a number of us who were on the obviously traditional side, or as I'd like to say, what used to be the majority point of view and is still the gospel point of view. And they said, be more bold. Well, that's what I'm saying to them today. Be more bold. Everybody in the Episcopal Church, for example, who left, every priest, every bishop, everyone has lost their property and lost their stipends and lost their pensions in this country, had to stand bold. We had to be bold for the faith, because we knew on Judgment Day that was the real word.
What's your level of confidence, Bishop Ackerman, that either through in response to this or to future urgings or demands on the part of the LGBTQI community, that the Church of England can remain steadfast and, as you said, brave and bold?
I believe that it is, it's very grim. I think that the future is very grim. There's even an extraordinarily odd law that was passed, ordinance that was passed in the Church of England, which would allow for those priests of same sex, for example, who are in partnered relationships, as long as they are celibate, to be able to function as priests. Now, maybe I missed something there, but that's the first step. The Episcopal Church has gone through all of that. And so the future is rather grim. But I think that the thing that in the end, the Church of England is going to have to understand is that the vast majority of Anglicans don't speak English, or have English not so much as their first language, I should say, but rather would not look very kindly upon the fact that they've had to pay mighty prices to remain Christians where they live, and that in one sweep, a church such as the Church of England would not stand by them.
Are you saying, in effect, that whatever the Church of England decides to do, the true future of faithful Anglicanism probably is not in England?
I think for the very first time in almost two millennia, when people will begin talking about Anglicanism, they will not be talking about it as being centered in Canterbury.
Bishop Keith Ackerman is a former bishop of the Episcopal Diocese in Quincy, Illinois. He's ambassador for Anglican and Ecumenical Affairs for the Anglican Church in North America. Bishop Ackerman, thank you very much for being our guest, and keep up the good work.
Well, God bless you. Thanks for your prayers, and I pray for the faithful who are listening in.
When we come back from this break, we're going to spend some time with a regular guest, Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. We do a series with him every week. In fact, every Thursday afternoon, called Christ in the Old Testament. We're going to be in Isaiah chapters 17 and 18 with him when we come back. We're going to be talking about Christ in the overthrow of the earthly city of Damascus to kick it all off. Stay tuned.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
The Memoria Press invites all Issues Etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on your favorite CPH Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I'm not a Christian, but I listen to your show because actually you do have some interesting topics.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Do you believe that there's not one error in the Bible? That's intellectually infantile. You also believe that Jesus is coming again. You promote extremely sexually repressive views.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Have fun waiting for Jesus to return. Got news for you. He ain't coming back.
I'm talking with regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb about a new book by one of his former professors. Which one, Ken?
The late Dr. Kurt Marquardt, and the book is The Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People.
You edited this book.
Yeah, the unpublished manuscript was among Marquardt's papers, and it is vintage Marquardt, lively, engaging, centering in the Christ who saves, with an apologetics chapter at the end.
You can find out more about Saving Truth, Doctrine for Lay People, at lutheracademy.com.